You are listening to Radio Free Cybertron. And now, here is your host, Brian Kilby.
A woman came up to me and said, I'd like to poison your mind with wrong ideas that appeal to you, though I am not unkind. She looked at me, I looked at something written across her scalp, and these are the words that it faintly said as I tried to call for help. There's only one thing that I know how to do well, and I've often been told that you only can do what you know how to do well, and that's be you. Be what you're like. Be like yourself. And so I'm having a wonderful time, but I'd rather be whistling in the dark. Whistling in the dark. Whistling in the dark. Whistling in the dark.
You are listening to Radio Free Cybertron. I want to thank the computer last week for filling in for me. I didn't feel like doing the show. I don't know if I feel like doing it this week or not either, because I am lazy. That's capital L-A-Z-Y. I just am. You know, that's the way I was born. It's kind of like asking a fish not to, you know, swim. Like asking me not to be lazy. I guess that's why, you know, I'm a disc jockey professionally, because I just sit there and press buttons. I'm George Jetson, for goodness sakes. And if you read any of my work, fan fiction, you'll tell that I'm lazy too, just like Bob Skier and the crew at the Beast Machines. I've noticed that lately, that they take a lot of outs with Beast Machines, not just the writing, which I'm being critical there, not intentionally, but the animation, everything's choppy. And I'm off on a tangent, so I'll get back into it. I want to thank the computer for filling in for me. I want to apologize to the guys at coldhardslag.com, especially Heath. Sorry about not giving you guys proper credit for the interview, which we will air the second half of this week. They busted their butts getting this thing together. And the computer, his fault, blame him, failed to mention that they put it together, and with the help of the guys at, well, actually, I guess specifically Wheeze, unless someone tells me otherwise, I was basically there and helped out. So I want to remind you to get the interview with Ian Corlett, who and Alec Willows just happened to be there. Check out coldhardslag.com or wheezebucket.com. Specifically, though, wheezebucket.com is wanting me to play this. And I appreciate them letting me. And I appreciate the guys at coldhardslag.com. And Heath, hey there. Thanks for all the work and the help there. And I appreciate you letting me play this because it fills time. Filling time is what we do here at Radio Free Cybertron, and we do it well. Oh, well. Okay, on the show this week, we have, and I quote, the ATT Buzz. We also have the news from Cybertron. Turin has, I guess it's, what, City of Steel, his review, the Cartoon Viewing Club, which I was going to do that, and it completely slipped my mind, so I never actually posted it like I should have. And I really wanted to. But, you know, it's too much work, and I'm lazy with capital L. Now, also on the show, we have a semi-review. We'll call it an overview of Beast Machines Night Scream. I picked him up this week, and I think he's nifty. I think everyone should buy him. And I'll tell you why. Is that it? I think that's it. ATT Buzz, review of Night Scream. Review of City of Steel. And, really, that's it. Yeah, it is. Didn't have any time this week. Okay, I lie. I had plenty of time, but RSC completely slipped my mind. And I'm, like, doing this on the 11th hour. There is no Bad Poets Corner this week. That will be back next week. And also back next week will be the return of Trivia. Yes, Skylinx. Now, no force in the universe can stop me. Yeah. It will be the original trivia with the clip, where I will play the clip, and you email me the episode. And that will be up next week. And we'll also have a review of Wild Ride, the super version by Matrix Prime, and it will be read by the computer. So coming up now on Radio Free Cybertron is the ATT Buzz with John DeLuna.
How you doing, everybody? This is the ATT Buzz, and we've had a good week on ATT. Not much news, and that's kind of expected, I guess. Slow time of year. After that Transtech Transformers vague info from previews, we really had nothing hard news to follow up on for that. And Beast Machine Season 2 is humming along. No news there. No real interest there, although the Spark Wars is raging, and we're at a high point, in my opinion, of the entire series. Now, as far as ATT itself, even though we didn't have enough news to really keep the news group flowing on that end, as far as entertainment, the news group was great this week. First, let's get rid of the two news bits that did show up on ATT. First, we got pictures of the Takara PVCs that are going to be released at the end of this year as a tribute to G1, so to speak. Part of the G1 retro craze right now. Takara's cashing in a little bit more than Hasbro, but in Japan, merchandising has always been a lot bigger over there compared to here. I mean, not since G1 have we really had merchandising. I mean, how many times have you seen a Black Arachnia training bra or a Tarantulas lunchbox, a Cheetor cereal? We don't have that kind of stuff. The only time we have merchandising in the U.S. is when we have phenoms like Pokemon and Digimon. Then you see the merchandising blitz, and even then it only lasts really 1 or 2 years. So as far as Transformers, it's been toys, it's been cartoons, and that's about it. Now, in Japan, it's consistently Transformer merchandise as well as toys and show. They really do blitz with their name brands. I mean, we had Beast Wars sausages, for God's sakes, over there, which is scary on so many levels when you see Rat Trap on a package of Frankfurters. Now, as far as those PVCs, we did get full colored pictures of the 12 that are going to be released, or at least we think we do. We think we've seen the first 12 and the last 12 as far as the news is gone, because there hasn't been any more news of a second wave. And what sucks about these 12 is that there's really only 6 PVCs. 6 original characters: RC, Optimus Prime, Megatron, God Jinrai, Ultra Magnus, and Starscream. And the other 6 are the exact same 6, only this time they're crystal. They look like ice sculptures. It's really 6 PVCs and two of the same character, one colored, one clear. More clear repaints, so to speak, from Takara. Thank you, Takara. Also, it looks like Transformer Car Robots will come to an end prematurely, possibly, in Japan, because Takara, well, they ain't got the bucks to pay the TV stations to air Transformers Car Robots the cartoon. So, as far as the cartoon goes, it looks like it might be off the air maybe before the entire series has a chance to run, which wouldn't be surprising, because if they're running out of money and they don't feel like paying the TV stations, there's still quite a few episodes of Transformer Car Robots to run. There's, I think, around 60 for the entire series, which is a huge number, even by Cell Animation Series standards. Certainly by CGI standards. I mean, we only get 13 episodes a season as far as CGI shows usually go. As far as Cell Animation, you usually get a bit more, and 60 for Car Robots was really pushing it. I would think that all those will show up on video or DVD eventually, but it looks like, as far as Japan television goes, you won't be seeing all the episodes. Now, let's get to some of the better news on ATT, some of the more lighthearted stuff. Who's who on ATT? You know, it's been a while since we've had a thread of who's who. We usually have one of those, oh, I'd say about every month, but it's been since at least mid-summer since we've had a thread, and our own wonderful fearless leader, Brian Kilby, started one this week. And I think why I like who's who on ATT threads is because it shows just how fast this news group can evolve and change in a short amount of time. I mean, the turnover in this fandom is a lot more severe than you'd probably think at first. Most people probably don't want to realize the fact that people come in and out of trans fandom very quickly. If you've been a fan for over 2 years, you're probably in the vast minority. Most people like Transformers for about a year, and then they fade out of it. They're either new kids that find Beast Machines and Beast Wars, like it, and grow tired of it when the next new thing comes around, or they're people who came in because of nostalgia, like it, love it, go hardcore, collect a bunch of toys, get in a bunch of pro G1, G1 rules, Beast Wars sucks kind of threads, or vice versa, and then quickly that nostalgia fades out, they sell off their toys or they put them back in the closet, and they move on to something else. It's just a fad for them. I think that's the way most people in G1 and Beast Wars and Beast Machines and trans fandom in general are, and who's who on ADD shows that, because every time one of those threads starts up, they get a lot of different replies, and lots of people are only around to reply to one who's who thread one time in their entire life. Now, this time we got a real eclectic turnout. I saw people that were at least 30, 35 years old. I saw people who were younger than 15, 14 years old. I saw people who like all sorts of music, all sorts of toys, some people who only like Transformers. It's interesting to see that. Also on ATT was another post, which I thought was great. It was Random Jessalt Night, started by M. Cypher. I usually don't drop names of who starts threads, but this week, since those were the two big threads that fueled ATT this week, that cut out the trolling crap, some of the flames, I figured that the two innovators of the two main threads this week deserve a little credit, deserve some props. This one, started by M. Cypher, was a little game, and I think it's going to have a good future on ATT, where you take any group of Transformers and you come up with a way to make a Jessalt out of them. You don't have to do it in real life, per se, but maybe as this game evolves, when people say, okay, make a Jessalt out of Prowl, Smokescreen, and Sunstreaker, somebody will, and they'll take pictures of it and post it on ATT as a follow-up. Anyway, all I've got to say is this. The one Jessalt I don't want to see is Trax and Starscream. I mean, it's not like they don't form a Jessalt every night anyway. Moving on to the big issue at hand for ATT and trans fandom in general. This week, I came to the realization that Car Robots has ruined ATT. As much as I love the line, it has ruined this fandom as far as this news group goes, and here is why. Okay, what Transformers Car Robots has done is it has brought in the fringe element to ATT like no other line will or possibly could have at this point in time. At this time, everything was perfect for Car Robots to do what it did, and what it did was bring in a bunch of not so hardcore, not so interested, barely interested at all trans fans, quote unquote. They're not really fans. They're more like people who dig G1 for nostalgia. They don't keep up with Transformers in general. They don't care about Beast Machines. They don't care about Beast Wars. All they do is remember that G1 was cool and it was something that they played with when they were a kid. Therefore, anything past G1 sucks. Anything that the kids like today sucks. It's automatically not as good because it wasn't during their childhood, it wasn't during their generation, it wasn't made for them. The reason they came back was because Transformers is popular right now. It was in the back of their mind, and when somebody said to them, or when they heard somewhere on the internet that Japan had come out with car Transformers with Autobot symbols, they went crazy. And since Beast Machines, one of the more controversial lines, was running over here, they had perfect fodder to compare Car Robots and Beast Machines. Car Robots rules, Beast Machines sucks. And they didn't have to, and they don't even want to look at either one of the toys. The main problem I have with these people that love Takara to death and hate Hasbro right now is because they don't care to learn anything about either line. I seriously doubt they have ever touched Super Fire Convoy. I seriously doubt they have ever touched Supreme Cheetor or Deluxe Jetstorm or Wild Ride or Speedbreaker or any of the toys from any of the other lines. And that's the biggest problem because, see, this is my personal opinion. And even though it's an opinion, I think it's pretty much right. You have no right to judge a toy line or any product until you have personally handled it, tried it, tested it, seen it from the inside and from the outside, looked at it from all angles, reviewed it up and down and left and right, and bent it over a chair and hit it and beat it with a whip. And I don't think these guys have done any of that with anything involving Transformers since they were a kid. They just like jumping on the bandwagon for car robots because, A, it's Japanese, hence it's cooler than Americans because we're square, and over there they've got cool anime and Gundam Wing and all this other stuff. B, it's got cars instead of longhorn sheep or apes and cheetahs and rats, and so it must be cool because it's got vipers and fire trucks and robots and Autobot symbols, number three, which means since it has an Autobot symbol, it automatically ties in with G1, hence it's cool and Maximals and Predacons and who's heard of that, and Hasbro's ruining the world and Transformers sucks. It's never been the same since, 1987 or anything past post-movie. One other thing that I've noticed about these people is they seem to think Transformers ended with the movie. They fail to mention Pretenders or Triggerbots or Firecons or any of the less desirable points of G1, but they point out all the flaws of Beast Wars and Beast Machines, mainly because it's easier, mainly because they can look at it and they can see it. It's another point, another case, another sign that they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know G1 stuff. They don't research it. They don't keep up with fandom. Look, you're not a trans fan, okay? I hate to sound elitist, but you're not a trans fan, truly, if you don't watch the show or play with the toys or buy the toys or keep up with the fandom or respect other opinions. If you just spout off from memories you had when you were 10 years old, if you just spout off from things you remember from 15 years ago, if you're just fueled by pure nostalgia and you don't keep up with the contemporary happenings of Transformers, if you don't buy the toys, you don't test the toys, you don't handle the toys, you're not a true fan. You're just somebody who's nostalgic over your past, nothing else, nothing more. And hence, your opinions, your flames, your irrational behavior on ATT, and I've seen way too much of this, posts that just flat out say G1 sucks or Takara is a god. I've had enough of it. I'm fed up with it. You're not fans. Your opinion really doesn't count, and that's why I don't give weight to it, and that's why I ignore it pretty much. And that's why I'm happy that the handful of people that are worth a crap on ATT continue to fight through this, continue to post intelligent points, continue to do relevant, accurate toy reviews, good and bad, of both lines. People who praise Takara and bash Takara and praise Hasbro and bash Takara when warranted. I'm glad and thankful that those people are still on ATT, and I'm out of breath and I'm out of ideas for this week. That's the ATT Buzz. I am John DeLuna.
And thank you there, John. Also want to mention that on the show this week we have second half of what we'll play anyway of the interview with Ian Corlett and Alec Willows, who is there. And for the rest of it, check out coldhardslag.com or weedsbucket.com. Either way, coming up now is Turin with his review of City of Steel.
You're listening to Radio Free Cybertron, the best in Transformers on the Internet.
Hello, everyone. This is Turin with the next installment in the Cartoon Viewing Club review series. You'll have noticed that it's a week late. I forgot. Of course, even if I'd remembered, I probably wouldn't have gotten done on time. You'll have noticed that I haven't actually lifted a finger around here for quite a while. That's pretty much because I'm an utterly lazy bum. Well, that and I've been incredibly busy lately. I mean, really busy. I won't bore you with the details. The details are actually really interesting, not boring a bit. But I've got to have some secrets, don't I? The one thing I did do that's Transformers related during the past month is to turn my girlfriend into a Beast Wars fan. we watched a G1 episode, and she wasn't real crazy about it, because the animation is so dated. But when Beast Wars Part 1 came on, she was amazed. We've actually watched quite a few episodes by now. She wanted to watch more episodes. We watched the pilot, we watched Fallen Comrades, The Spark, Double Jeopardy, Spider's Game, Other Voices, and Aftermath. Basically, most of the plot-advancing episodes from Season 1, and we'll go ahead and watch all of Season 2 when we have a moment. So anyway, while I haven't been around on RFC, and I haven't really been around very much on ATT, I have been doing the work of a true trans fan, and converting others to the fold. So I haven't been just totally inactive. Anyway, on to the episode at hand. Last month, I reviewed A Prime Problem, the first episode on the first volume of the Kid Rhino re-releases of The Transformers, the Generation 1 series. And now, of course, it is time for the second episode of Volume 1, City of Steel. I know some people have been awaiting the ATTCM reviews of this episode with dread and horror. City of Steel has quite a reputation as one of the worst episodes ever. And you know, after rewatching it, I really can't argue too much with that. I said last time that I didn't hate this episode, and I don't. I guess. It's just dumb. I mean, to be honest, it's one of the dumbest episodes there is. Everybody in the episode pretty much has the brain capacity of a boiled zucchini. But look on the bright side, at least we get to have fun ripping it apart. And if you're a Decepticon fan, then you're in luck, because the Autobots provide quite a bit of fodder for much cut damage. And to be fair, this episode does contain one of the funniest physical comedy scenes in the series. And we'll get to that a little bit later. By the way, when I wrote up this review, I had not yet read any of the reviews of this episode on Alt Toys Transformers Classic Moderated. I avoided reading any reviews because I didn't want it to color my initial reaction. After I wrote this review, but before I'm recording it, which I'm doing right now, I did pop over and look at a couple of things, and Rob Powers had a really funny review. So read his on ATT. He usually has pretty good stuff. He had a couple of really funny things. And a couple other people had some really, really interesting comments. So by all means, if you're an RFC listener, but you don't necessarily frequent Alt Toys Transformers Classic Moderated, please do, because there's actually quite a bit of interesting stuff there. To start with, a brief summary of City of Steel. And don't you love that, like, super dramatic title? The Decepticons invade New York City. Megatron captures Prime. Megatron slices up Prime into itty-bitty bits. Old Megs turns New York into a new city called New Cybertron, complete with giant metal structures that serve no known purpose except to look cool. The Autobots sneak in, rescue Prime, reassemble him, and then proceed to kick the Cons' waste disposal units. Everything returns to normal. The end. By the way, if you're not a G1 fan already, do not judge the series by Volume 1 of the Rhino re-releases. Most of the other episodes are actually a lot better, and in fact there are several G1 episodes that are really cool, even by adult standards, provided you have enough depth in your character to get beyond the low-budget animation. Anyway, like I did last time, I'm just going to watch the episode and pick it apart. First up, we have the ultra-cool Season 2 opening credits. Doesn't Omega Supreme look so fabulous when he steps on Blitzwing? I mean, just stomp, smash, and see ya! Turns to shoot somebody else. Blitzwing is nothing to him. By the way, I guess the credits aren't canonical as far as the story goes, but we do see a Constructicon rescue Blitzwing. Is that evidence of their supposed camaraderie and esprit de corps? After the credits, the episode begins. Laserbeak soars majestically over the Statue of Liberty. Naturally, nobody notices, of course. He flies into the secret temporary underground base. Trademark. The Constructicons are building stuff and squabbling among themselves, and Megatron comes in and basically chews them out.
Silence! I want you working, not nagging at each other like hyper-driven chatteroids!
And we're off to a great start with the dialogue. amazing how the writer's word choice here conveys emotion so effectively. Unfortunately, that emotion is one of embarrassment on the part of the viewer.
Remove the debris, Longhaul!
Remove! Remove! Always remove! I didn't join this outfit to be a dump truck!
You know, I saw just about every G1 episode as a kid, and have in the last 6 months rewatched every G1 episode there is. And in fact, I have Devastator sitting on a shelf not 5 feet away, and I still don't have all the Constructicons memorized. I mean, they all sound pretty much the same to me. Nobody's personality really stands out in my mind. In this episode, at least, they are basically just a group of walking children's television cliches. The dialogue clip I just played is embarrassing to listen to. The line is bad, and the delivery is horrendous. There's an interesting bit about Longhaul joining this outfit. Not quite sure what that means. We've gotten several different origins for the Constructicons. One of them, Megatron, says they built the Constructicons. One of them, the Omega Supreme, says the Constructicons were reprogrammed. Which I think goes in with joining this outfit just as easily as the building. I forget what the third one is. What's the third? Everybody says there's three different continuities for that. I don't remember what the third one is. But just one thing. If Longhaul really joined the Decepticons, and if he didn't join them to become a dump truck, why is that his alt mode? Did Megatron force him to choose that mode against his will? These are the mysteries into which we must not pry.
Soon all of New York City will be mine!
standard Megatron boast. Yawn. Anyway, moving on, the Constructicons dig around under the Empire State Building in New York and cause it to sink into the ground. Meanwhile, at Autobot headquarters, they are all standing around in that one big room, watching the news. Prime makes a tremendous leap of logic and concludes that Megatron is somehow to blame. Who would have thought? They roll out. Bumblebee tries to ditch Spike, actually, but apparently he manages to catch up later. Several Autobots are then seen riding around in the Atlantic Ocean on their little hydrofoil thingies. They see Laserbeak. Laserbeak sees them. Laserbeak could hardly help noticing 5 cars driving around on the top of the water. Ugh.
It's that nosy no good Nikon Laserbeak! He'll blab our plans to Megatron!
Too late to change him now. We'll just have to hope we're too fast for him.
Yeah, we all know how slow and unreliable Laserbeak is. That's why Megatron hardly ever uses him for reconnaissance. Not. Is Mirage really that dumb? At least he didn't say, just turn off your optic sensors. If we can't see him, he must not really be there. Prime and some other Autobots, I don't know who they are, roll in by land to meet in Central Park. Laserbeak reports all of their movements to Megatron. Great stealth. So the Autobots are met by Rumble, Frenzy, and Soundwave. That's the greeting party. Remember last time, the last review, I theorized that Soundwave actually has a very wicked and subtle sense of humor? I think I may have been onto something, because check this out. Now, I know it sounds like Rumble, but it's actually Frenzy, and then Rumble, and then Soundwave, finishing each other's sentences.
Don't you care to smell hanging out in Central Park? It can be hazardous.
To your health.
See? Soundwave's a funny guy. He's just into deadpan. He is so not emotionless. There's another episode, I think it's Child's Play, I don't know, where he plays catch with his tapes. So see, he's a complex guy. I think people give Soundwave a hard time sometimes. Prime tells the Autobots to transform. Is that order really necessary? If enemy soldiers show up and someone transforms without being ordered to first, so that they can defend themselves? Is Prime really going to chew him out for that? Or are the rest of the Autobots so mindless that they wouldn't think to transform without being told to do so first? Huh. Rumble and Frenzy do their little pile driver routine, which seems oddly animated to me in the first cut there. And Ironhide just falls over. I mean, he just falls over. Timber like a cut log. Boom. I don't know why. I hope he didn't break his hip or anything. Meanwhile, underground, Megatron has one of those green guys dig directly under Optimus Prime. And Optimus Prime comes crashing down. It's funny. Hasn't he almost fallen in a pit several times? But he managed to hold on or levitate out or something? But this time, he just falls, makes no effort to leap aside, makes no effort to grab on anything. I guess he read the script. So Megatron comes up and, taking his sweet time about it, zaps Prime right in the grill, and Prime just lays there and lets him do it. Well, that sounded a bit rude, actually. Anyway, Prime sure is vulnerable in that grill, isn't he? Ooh, foreshadowing to the movie, where he gets hit there repeatedly and dies as a result. Here, Megatron just zaps him once, and Prime is down. Now, what I want to know is, how did Megatron know to do that? And if he can do it that easily, how come he never has before or since? Decepticon fans, answer this. If Prime is such a wuss that one cattle prod to the belly button puts him down for the count, why haven't the cons won the war by now? I guess when Prime gets reassembled, they fix the problem? Alpha Trion sure does shoddy work. So Megatron tells the Autobots to leave. And guess what? They do! With Prime gone, they run around like headless chickens. Huh. Now One Piece, well, at least it's consistent with other episodes. One piece of dialogue that does strike me as odd is this.
And if you were to fear one Megatron, I'll melt Optimus Prime down for paperclips.
Do they use paperclips on Cybertron? Why? Do they really have paper there? Paper is organic. Do they have trees or rice or papyrus on Cybertron? If they do, does that mean Beast Machines was right all along? Or, gasp, is Megatron actually using an Earth term? He's actually using the language of puny flesh creatures of human germs? He's been corrupted by humanity! Obviously, our culture has affected him, since he's borrowing vocabulary from us. Megatron, imitating our speech. Who would have thought? Anyway, the Autobots all hang their heads and wonder what to do. Hound says that they can't attack because then Prime will die. Interesting how they're willing to let Megatron rape the city of New York and cause millions to be homeless, allow their enemies to build a fortified base and entrench their position, all for the sake of one Autobot. That's not real good strategy, in my opinion. Although, you know, I think I have the answer to the age-old question. Who is Prime's second-in-command? It's not Prowl. It's not Ironhide. It's not Jazz. It's Spike! Yes, Prime's puppy is in charge when he's not around, because Spike not only comes up with a plan when no one else does, he basically says, "Follow me!" And everybody does! Now, there's another episode I like, and I don't remember what it is, when Spike, he actually picks up a Transformers gun, a gun that's bigger than he is, and he runs outside to shoot at the Decepticons. Now, you can say what you like about Spike, but he must be pretty strong to do that. And he sure has guts. He's not necessarily real bright. Anyway, Megatron taunts Prime. Prime's little suspended animation, you know, cadaver, just laying there. But he admits that he's worried about Prime, even immobilized. Hook then says he will disassemble Prime with finesse and pleasure. Lame dialogue, and inaccurate too, because Hook's idea of finesse is to whip out a lightsaber and hack Prime into pieces. So Longhaul dumps him out and outflop little bits of Prime here and there. Not just major pieces like limbs either, but spare wires and circuit boards and assorted bings and bobs. Optimus Prime's head is still alive, and somehow, don't ask, he can remote control his arms. His two forearms come and actually knock Megatron down. Okay, I'm sorry, but Prime must be pretty strong to knock Megatron down with just his forearms. I mean, not even any biceps or triceps or anything, no leverage. But what do I know? Megatron claims the head of Prime. Then, instead of destroying it, he puts it on a shelf. What does that say? It doesn't say much about being bright, for one thing. Second of all, what does it say about Megatron? He obviously doesn't have any compunctions about taking life, as is shown in the movie. So our only real conclusion is that he wants Prime around to torment. Do we need any further evidence that Megatron is a sadist? Nope. Now, of course, some people don't see being a sadist as necessarily bad. Those people are crackpots, however. Anyway, the green guys fiddle with Prime's parts. That sounded incredibly rude. And use them for various projects. His right arm and gun they mount on a tower as a remote-controlled weapon. That's Prime's rifle, by the way. The Autobots, meanwhile, are walking around in the storm drains of New York City. Storm drains, by the way, not sewers. Go outside. You see those gratings there on the side of the road where the water goes? That water does not go into the sewer system. It goes into the storm drain system. Your toilet, your bathtub, your sink, that goes into a sewer system, and they are separate systems. The Autobots here were in the storm drain system that just does runoff water. I know this because when I was a kid, I used to skateboard through storm drain systems in my neighborhood. And actually, we used to actually go around to different neighborhoods and try out their storm drains too. We called it going tunneling. That was actually a pastime, at least among my little social group. Anyway. So they're following in the storm drains, readings of Optimus Prime, but the readings keep changing around. They get chased by what they call an Alligatorcon. You gotta love that terminology. Now, there are jungle people in the Amazon basin that have never yet been touched by what we call civilization, and one of their 3-year-olds would still be able to figure out that the Alligatorcon is made of Optimus Prime's body parts. I mean, it's red and blue and has blue eyes, for crying out loud. And yet, they try to make it be this great mystery. They only find out later, oh wow, it was Prime all along. Well, who knew? Duh. So anyway, right now they fight, and they, fortunately, when they fight the Alligatorcon, they don't just like shoot it and blow it up. That'd be embarrassing, wouldn't it? Prime, I know it's a drag, being just a head atop two lower legs, but your other parts got sort of blowed up. It's kind of a funny story, actually. it's all Mirage's fault. So they fight the Alligatorcon, and they toss it out into the river via an old train locomotive. And Hound actually gets some almost funny dialogue.
Train now leaving from Madison Avenue, Park Avenue... Lexington Avenue and the river!
Well, I guess it's the delivery. Megatron continues to oversee the construction of his city of New Cybertron. It turns out Mixmaster can take solid metal into his body. Skywarp shoves a crushed up car into his body, and he outputs girders. I just find that interesting. I don't have anything witty to say. Starscream talks to Reflector and reluctantly concedes that Megatron has done something right for a change. The Autobots, meanwhile, find Prime's head, which Megatron sensibly put just in a closet somewhere, on a shelf. He then senses the presence of his lower legs, which are, guess what, just sitting around. I guess the cons couldn't find a use for them. Maybe they were end tables. I don't know. They were just sitting around. So the Autobots finally work out that the Alligatorcon is made of Prime parts. They capture him and reconstruct Prime. And you know, I have a theory that the Alligatorcon is actually a sentient Decepticon, and that Starscream was in love with... Oh wait, wrong episode. So Prime is reconstructed, and it's too bad that he didn't say, "I feel altogether better." See, that would have been cool, but he didn't say it. He's still missing his right arm, of course, because it's being used as a gun emplacement. The Decepticons then attack using Prime's gun arm as pretty much the sole weapon for a while. They just use that. I mean, that's it. Prime's gun. That's what everybody's running from. Then they bust out with some really scary remote control cabs, or battle taxis, as Megatron calls them. And you know, that's just so... not. It's just not. Sorry, it isn't. Prime transforms and rolls out, and amazingly enough, his truck mode is actually drawn incomplete to reflect the fact that he doesn't have his right arm. So I have to hand it to them that that was actually a really nice touch. I looked for that, and normally I don't pay attention to the animation, but I looked for it, and I said, I wonder, and they got it right. So I was pleased with that.
Even with one arm, Prime is primo!
So then Optimus Prime decides that he's had enough, and he's not going to take it anymore. So he decides to go up and get his arm back.
Now it's time to lend myself a hand and an arm as well!
Somehow he climbs up the building one-handed. The Jets, or Seekers, as some say. I don't, I say Jets. Anyway, the Jets show up and attack, and for some unfathomable reason, they crash right through the building. Sideswipe hops on top of Starscream and forces him into the water.
Say uncle, or I'll shove your nose in your afterburner! Uncle! Gee! I didn't know Decepticons had uncles!
Love that dialogue. And love that Decepticon dignity, too. The Constructicons finally decide to form Devastator. I have never yet figured out why they don't do that right off the bat. Don't ask me. For some reason, Devastator speaks in the third person a lot. He says, "Devastator says... Devastator says this, Devastator says that." It's odd. And, well, dumb. Sorry, but it's dumb. I kept waiting for him to play a game of Devastator Says, you know. Devastator says, "Put your hands over your head." Devastator says, "Hop on one foot." "Stop hopping." "Oh, Devastator didn't say." Bumblebee and Spike break into Megatron's command post, or comm post for short. Haha. And they insult him and run away. And they get away. They get away. A puny little flesh creature outruns and evades the leader of the Decepticons. Megatron can't hit a human being with his fusion cannon. What a sad showing that is.
You'll never catch us, Megaklutz!
Megaklutz, do you dare to insult me in my own command post?
Megatron, having failed to catch a human and a minibot in his own base, having missed so badly that he accidentally fries his own control console, takes the opportunity to gloat a little bit, to save face.
Devastator will destroy Prime, and I shall be master of all!
You know, there's a thread on ATTCM right now, currently, that the question was, what would you ask Megatron or Prime if you could talk to them? And I think I would ask Megatron, were you ever bullied at school? All of this shouting and I'm gonna rule the universe stuff has to have some reason. It sure sounds like a front for insecurity. Maybe his trigger is really prosthetic. Never mind. Devastator, meanwhile, is perched atop a huge building, holding Prime in his hand. Wheeljack tries to use remote-controlled helicopters to bring him down. Now, I actually like this part.
I saw this once when I linked my data bank to an Earth television transmission. I think it was called King Kong. And Devastator reminds me of that big baboon.
Don't let him get to your Wheeljack. Maybe Devastator saw the same picture.
Hound is pretty funny, you know? But did people really refer to the movies as pictures as late as 1985? Just how old were the men writing this show, anyway? This episode isn't real entertaining, as you figured out by now, except to rip into it. But here, near the end, after suffering through all of this, we have a great physical comedy scene. One of the best in the series. Ratchet and Ironhide, twins in white and red, standing next to each other in Megatron's compost. They hear Megatron shouting in the room above about victory and all that kind of stuff. They look up. They look at each other. They simultaneously raise their guns and blast the ceiling. Megatron and Soundwave fall through the ceiling. They fall down through the room. They hit the floor. They fall right through the floor and keep on going. Ratchet and Ironhide look at each other again. This scene is hilarious! See, it's the subtle stuff I like. In fact, there's a scene from Pulp Fiction, I think, where John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson sort of look at each other and shoot somebody or whatever, that sort of rips off these mannerisms, you know? And you saw it on Transformers first. So after this, Spike and Bumblebee run out, and they tell Prime that they wrecked Soundwave's control of his arm. And he says, that's the news I've been waiting to hear. Does he really have to wait around for this news? He can't try his little remote control trick every few seconds just in case? I mean, what if Bumblebee and Spike succeeded in wrecking Soundwave's control of his arm, but didn't succeed in coming out and giving him the message? He would just sit around being crushed to death by Devastator until he got the news through proper channels. Great move there, Prime. Now, of course, right up here near the end, in the exciting climax, is the dialogue that everybody remembers from this episode. And I thought this was really cool when I was a kid. And then I get on ATT and I found out everybody hates it. But you know what? I still like it. And I don't even care what anybody else says. I think it was fun.
It will take more than your puny arm to stop Devastator! Right? Which is why it's lucky the hand at the end of that arm is holding a gun!
So Prime blasts Devastator. Devastator fall down. Go boom. The Decepticons run away. Prime gets put back together. The end. You know, a lot of G1 episodes end really abruptly. They have the climax, and then they roll over and go to sleep. No falling action. Just, that's it, go home. You know, a lot of movies have started doing this too, ending right on the climax, and it is very annoying. Now, I understand that G1 episodes didn't have a lot of time to tell a story, but they can pace it better than that. Although right there at the end, Prime, he says his body is just like it was. And then he moves his arm, and it creaks. Just old age, I guess. Or is that another canon argument? Well, is the sound effect real, as in, do the other people in the show hear it? Or is it added in, like the music or whatever? Who knows? That's pretty much it for City of Steel. What can I say about this episode? Reviewing it was actually kind of fun, even though it was a lot of work. But just sitting down and watching it, just for entertainment value, I mean, there's nothing horrible about it. It's just sort of, eh. I mean, there's some embarrassing dialogue, and some almost cool dialogue. The only really redeeming features, though, are Megatron being called Mega Klutz, and Ratchet and Ironhide's little scene. Now, the next episode on the Cartoon Viewing Club is The Search for Alpha Trion, and this is the one with the female Autobots, so it should presumably be somewhat interesting. And that's next month. Well, I am really tired right now, so I think I will wrap it up. Thanks for listening if you made it this far, and you can send me an email, let me know what you think. Please, someone, anyone, send me an email. I need feedback, please. Until next time, this is Turin for Radio Free Cybertron.
Hello, this is the computer. Brian has reprogrammed. Thank you. Brian has reprogrammed me so that I'm a much more productive and much less evil computer. I love everyone and everything. If you have a question you want answered, email askrxctfradio.com. Thank you. Remember the address. Email askrxctfradio.com. It is what is good for you.
And coming up right now on Radio Free Cybertron is the news from Cybertron.
Radio Free Cybertron.
In the news from Cybertron this week, Optimus Prime was turned away from last week's presidential debate, though he meets the requirements to be in the debate. The overseeing committee cited Prime's omission due to his gigantic size and possible threat of carbon monoxide emissions. When questioned afterwards, Bush claimed to be unaware of Optimus Prime's existence. Al Gore pointed to Maribel Sheets of Tacoma, Washington, a 74-year-old widow who lives month to month on her Social Security checks. Mrs. Sheets was confined to a respirator after being subjected to the fumes that Optimus Prime emits, and that she has periods of extreme nausea, loss of awareness, and heart palpitations. Afterwards, Gore's staff were forced to admit that Mrs. Sheets does not actually exist. But, quote, the point got across. The current standings, according to a Decepticon poll in the presidential election, is George Bush, 1%, Al Gore, 1%, Ralph Nader, negative 2%, Pat Buchanan, negative 3%, Optimus Prime, negative 13,768%, and Galvatron with the demanding lead of 167,384%. Fusor Sky Shadow was found dead due to an apparent suicide earlier this week. Friends say that he became distraught after purchasing a mirror. And that is the news from Cybertron this week.
Radio Free Cybertron. Unparalleled. Unmatched. Unpaid. Unfortunately. 0% profit. 100% fun. Radio Free Cybertron.
And coming up now on Radio Free Cybertron, we have, brought to you by WheezeBucket.com, and produced by the guys at ColdHardSlag.com. For the video, check it out at ColdHardSlag.com. For the audio, you can get it at WheezeBucket.com, thanks to Heath and everybody there. We have the second half of the interview that we play. The rest, as I said, are on those sites of the Ian Corlett interview.
Ian James Corlett? Yeah, listen to him. Morning, everybody. Okay. Well, first question for both of y'all is, what is like your individual story on how you personally got into the voice acting industry?
That's what I played last week. See, even I can make mistakes. Constantly. To correct that, it will take me till next week. We'll be right back.
To be or not to be, that is question. What is answer? Me not know. Slag, what is answer?
Me not know. Me slag, say you full of beryllium baloney.
Snarl, tell me answer. Me snarl, want to be.
Yes, yes, no. Me want to be too.
Me want to be too, too.
Too, too.
And thanks to coldhardslag.com for doing that, and for wheezebucket.com for asking us to play it, and again, to coldhardslag for the permission. I want to get to Night Scream here. I rarely buy toys. I mean, I have other things I have to spend my money on nowadays. Of course, I'm getting a second job, so I may be able to buy more stuff. But I rarely buy anything. Lately, I've been on a spending spree. I got Black Convoy, Fox Kids, Rat Trap, the Transmetal. Of course, they didn't release anything else. Obsidian, Metal's Cheetor, and this week I got Night Scream. I saw him on the shelf, and I thought I might as well get him now. And I'm glad I did. I like him. Let me start off with his bat mode. His bat mode's actually pretty spiffy. It's better than I thought it was. In the box, it's kind of ugly. But when you open it up, he has a little launching gimmick. His launcher, kind of like Depth Charge has, but better than Depth Charge's. It's sort of like his audio sonar attack thing on Beast Machines. Kind of, sort of. The head pivots and changes the direction of the launcher. I like that. And that's really about most of the perks of the bat mode. It's, you know, it's not the mode I'm going to focus on. And that mode, he also has a claw attack mode, which personally is totally pointless. But I digress. But getting to his robot mode, I really like this. His, it's not show accurate, not really in the least. This is more an idealized version of Night Scream. If he were a person, he'd be about 6'5", probably about 250. His arms are still kind of scrawny, like they are in the show, but he's physically larger than he is on the show. He's a large toy. On my shelf, he's, I guess he's about a foot tall at the head, something like that. He's taller than my Galvatron and G2 Megatron, looking up at him. His wings attach to his arms, unlike the show model, which attached to his legs. But being show accurate is not the point here, because he's not. Pretty much, he has a clear plastic all over, specifically in his chest, which light up when you pull out the missile, the disc launcher. His wings fold back and sort of tip are somewhat obscured by their being thin. But when you look at him from the side, his wings are kind of ugly. They stick out, but they're not really detracting that much. His head is fairly show accurate. He's got the little hair hanging off, which isn't that bad. I know that some people are turned off by it, but I like it because he's more show accurate than most of the other toys. Which, you know, looking at some of them right now, their heads are fairly show accurate. Primal's head looks like Primal. Obsidian's head looks like Obsidian. Cheetor's head is a little off. Night Scream's head's pretty much show accurate. But as I said, the body isn't. He doesn't have the collar, the big fat collar thing around his neck that he has in the show. He's much taller, like I said, than in the show. He has the hands, but his hands aren't quite as thin. But what I do like about the toy is that it's large. I'm a nut for large toys. My favorite toys are consistently in the ultra scale and larger. You know, it's kind of hard to point out anything that I like specifically about the toy, for me personally, there is just a feeling that I get when I see something that I like. Like I said in the post about toys.transformers, I'm not the analytical type. I don't care if something is a centimeter too long or too short. As long as I get a feeling, as long as there's shelf appeal, as long as it looks good on the store aisles, which this one really didn't, and as long as it looks good on the shelf when I display it, which Night Scream definitely does, I'm happy. And I am. There's just a synergy about him that just works together, personally. You know, Transmetal to Megatron is a very, very nice toy, except he has a few flaws which fatally detract for him for me. But if you add up all the pros and cons, he's a very nice toy, but he just doesn't click, I guess, if that gets my point across. Optimal Optimus, when you add up all his features and everything, his other modes are sort of weak. And if you add him up, he doesn't really pass the standard that he should. But he does click. Literally, too, because when he... But it just clicks for me, and I like the toy. The same thing with, actually, with Transmetal 2... I can't remember his name. Can you believe that? Cybershark. Why couldn't I think of that? Cybershark clicks for me. He works. And so does, you know, Nightscream. He works. He has neat electronic stuff. He has a launcher, which is better than Depth Charges, who I also like. But he doesn't really have anything that detracts from him for me. It just works. I like him. And for me, he's a buy, and I would buy him. And believe me, I am one of the hardest people on earth to please when it comes to a toy. I just am. And, you know what? Pretty much, that's Radio Free Cybertron for this week. You know, I guess, you know, there's more stuff than it seems like, because, time flies. But, you know, it just doesn't seem like it, you know, takes that long. But tune in next week, when I'll hopefully make more sense, because, like I said, this was pretty much 11th hour. I'm going to leave you with more of They Might Be Giants. We started out there with Whistling in the Dark. That's what it was. I like They Might Be Giants. Sue me. And we'll end off things this week with them too. Just because I like them, it's Letterbox.
Tomorrow, cause a little bird never tells me anything. I wanna know she's my best friend, just a sparrow.